Hello, welcome to Oh No, Ross and Carrie, the show where we don't just report on fringe science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal, but take part ourselves.
Yep, when they make the claims, we show up so you don't have to. I'm Carrie Poppy.
And I'm Ross Blotcher, and you're listening to the first ever Oh No, Ross and Carrie special.
It's a special.
Christmas special.
Oh, it's not, though.
Oh.
It's July. In this one, we'll meet one of our favorite people, our theme music composer, our favorite foreman, that's former Mormon, an award-winning composer, director, writer, and editor, and the writer and star of the popular web series Mr. Deity, Brian Keith Dalton.
That's right. We'll attack Brian with probing questions and compliments and ask him some questions from our listeners. In our spirit of hands-on investigations and showing up, we have shown up on your doorstep.
That is true.
Now, if you don't know Brian's show, Mr. Deity...
I never noticed that you say Mr. Deity instead of deity.
I switch it up, actually.
I like deity. All my British friends say deity. Mr. Deity.
See?
It sounds fantastic.
Okay. We're going British today.
But whatever.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's funny. So, Brian Dalton, welcome to your number one favorite podcast. Oh, no, Ross and Carrie.
Thank you. Is this your fifth show? Sixth show? And you're still reading off the cue cards,
it's
the intro?
Lucky number.
Come on. What the hell?
It's different each
Jeez,
time.
Louise. All right, go ahead.
We're professionals.
Yeah.
I said welcome.
All right, yes.
Are you happy to
be
here?
Yes, I'm thrilled. I'm just grateful it's not a video podcast.
Why is that?
Because my hair is insane today.
Oh.
My hair is too long, and it's gotten to that point where I'm sure you guys experience this, where the one side of your head is fighting the other. It's like one side is Protestant, one side is Catholic, and each one is trying to claim ground.
No, you can see I'm doing the same thing. This is actually the longest my hair has ever been. And when it goes over the ears, that's annoying.
I'm feeling comfortable with my hair right now.
And I'm a little bummed that I couldn't use my big microphone. Can I just tell you that right out? Because
it's close by. You can.
I need
we can
my,
just hold it
but
over
it doesn't plug into your system here.
Like a safety.
Because the big microphone, I can get real close on it, and I sound like I have some bass to my voice.
Yeah.
I don't sound like a woman. Because right, well, I sound like a woman all the time.
We can do that in post.
You don't.
Yeah, bring down a lot of. I do. You know what? I'm on the phone all the time.
Uh-huh.
I'm talking to people, and I've told them my name is Brian, and I'm talking to them about my wife, and they go, "Yes, just hold on a moment, ma'am."
Oh
no!
I get that all the time.
Oh,
I'm not kidding.
It's horrible.
So I've just come to laugh at it. Amy thinks it's the funniest freaking thing in the world. She laughs out loud for 5 minutes.
Say something distinctly feminine, like something about periods.
I need to find a place that has some pads.
I don't believe it. But I am looking at you.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, we have.
Well,
to
I
say,
look so incredibly masculine.
Right.
That's the thing.
Touche.
Yeah,
and if you're looking at me, you go, "Oh my God, this guy's a hunk." But
right.
You know, when you're just hearing me, you're thinking, "Oh Jesus."
So it's a good thing you do a video podcast.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
I have to say though, I've seen you many times. I don't notice a difference in your hair right now.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just like, see this split right here?
Mm-hmm.
This is
it
just,
moves
if I try
around.
To, I usually part it here and then it comes over. And if I try to do that right now, there will be a war
you
have never seen. It will be apocalyptic.
This, yeah.
It'll be apocalyptic.
Yeah, I can do that too. Yeah. Ross is just messing his hair and then making a stupid face.
Half of my hair will be taken up. You know, like
Thessalonians.
Yeah, like in Thessalonians.
Well, speaking of your haircut.
Yes.
You're a former Mormon.
I am a Mormon.
And we're Mormons.
Yeah,
what?
You are.
Ross?
You are
that
now.
Was a
you don't
great
like my segue?
Segue?
you grew up in the church. What do you think of Ross and I becoming Mormons?
I think if you plan to stay Mormons, you're insane.
Even
if you well, especially if you don't believe.
Okay.
Yeah, you're particularly insane if you stay and you don't believe. But I don't know. I just don't know who can believe that kind of stuff. It's just craziness. I mean, it's a quarter inch short of moving into Scientology territory.
So
it's pretty wild.
Did you never believe it?
No, I believed it hook, line, and sinker.
But
I was raised in it. Yeah. So
I think that's the only excusable reason.
That's the only excusable reason. Yeah, you can have. And you know, for me, if you're not really suspicious of it by the time you're 25, even if you've been raised in it, you're doing something wrong.
Hmm.
That's my feeling.
Yeah, you know, now that I think of it, the church does slant pretty young. Like it seems like people have left by the time they're in the mid-20s, like if they're going to leave.
Well, and the strategy is to have as many babies as possible, as quickly as possible.
Sure.
And
absolutely.
So you can, you know, have a little bit of attrition there and still have a sizable number of Mormons.
Right. It's converting the world through the shunning of birth control. Basically, right. That's their program.
Oh, you know, actually, I asked them about birth control, and maybe our missionaries were super cool, but they were like, we don't care about it.
Well, of course they don't. They've made a 2-year commitment not to get any. Well, that's brave.
Right.
They don't want anyone to have fun.
But I specifically asked them, like, I don't want to have kids. Is that okay? And they said, yeah. And then I said, so birth control's okay? And they said, yeah.
Hmm. Well, it's like a lot of Catholics. I mean, there's prescriptions that come from on high, and then the people who actually just ignore them. So yeah. a lot of Mormons,
representatives of the church.
Yeah, but they're young kids. They don't know what they're talking
about. But you think if you talk to the actual
chief, if you talk to somebody, they're not against birth control. I mean, you can have birth control, but they do want you to just pump out the kids like nobody's business. But there at least is some kind of, you know, there is some kind of responsibility about it. They don't want you to be having kids that you can't afford and that kind of thing. In that regard, they're very, you know, like fiscal conservatives. Mm. With the exception of the past administration.
My sister's that way. If I get pregnant, God wills it, and that's her form of birth control.
Right, right. And that's why Jews went into the ovens, because God willed it. That's the way it works.
Right. If you
God wills everything that happens.
If you take it out to its logical conclusion, you get that kind of monstrosity.
We were at a place the other night where some guy, Amy's car, wouldn't start the battery.
Your wife, Amy.
Yeah, my wife, Amy. Mm-hmm. And a guy next to us happened to have some jumper cables, and he said, you know, I waited 20 minutes for this spot, so you, just so you know, everything happens for a reason, and I was so close to going to the whole Holocaust thing. Really? So, you think 6 million Jews died? Really?
You do got to take them through that median step, I think, before you go to the Holocaust. Yeah.
So, families were wiped out, children had blue dye injected to their eyes, and there was a good reason for that.
And he's just standing there holding his jumper cables.
What? Yeah. Well, I'm writing that scene up for a movie. So,
speaking of mass murder, on the way
you guys are good on the segues. I like that.
So on the way here, we were talking about your name, Brian Keith Dalton. You go with the middle name, and I was saying how normally, you know, John Wilkes Booth, it's the killers who use all three names just so you don't get confused with Brian James Dalton. But I assume because you're an actor? Or?
I had one reason that I did it. Hollywood is so nepotistic that I was hoping that somebody would think that I am the son of Brian Keith, the actor. Brian Keith.
Oh.
And say, hey, who's this? Is this Brian Keith's son? Let's bring him in. Let's give him a big... It hasn't worked. It just didn't work at all. My sister named me after that actor, Brian Keith, because she was... she's the one who prayed for me to come. My mom was really old when I was born. She was 45.
Oh, wow.
And my sister had been praying for a brother or sister, not in that order. And they said, okay, well, you name the kid. And she named me Brian Keith Dalton after the actor Brian Keith, which I always say is fortunate considering I could have been named Jody or Mr. French. You know,
those were the other options.
Yeah, basically. If you're a fan of the Family Affair show, you guys are probably too young for that.
No,
sorry.
You don't know Buffy and Jody and
Mr. French. Okay. Older folks, you know, write in. Tell them how much you love that joke.
Send us YouTube
links. I've
been
working on it.
So you left the church. How did you dislodge from Mormonism?
And we ask because we want to know. We're currently embedded.
I dislodged the official way that I dislodged. Is that what you're wondering about?
No, I mean,
what led me to dislodge?
What led you to? And then tell us, though.
It was kind of a long process. I mean, a lot of it was just learning to examine evidence. I kind of got, you know, I mean, you've been through it, right? The way you find out the truth in Mormonism is that you get down on your knees and you pray, and God causes a burning in your bosom, and you feel good about it, and you know that it's right by the way you feel.
Right.
Well, you know, if you're a thinking person, by the time you hit 18, 20, 21, you realize that your heart is just the crappiest, you know, conductor for truth and value and all of that stuff, because you've made so many bad decisions by that point based on your heart.
Yeah.
And so I became skeptical of that whole kind of methodology of finding out what's true and right and good. And fortunately, at the time, I was very into Mormonism, and they had another way to do it, and that was evidence, because they had all these great books, you know, about the Nag Hammadi Codex and the Dead Sea Scrolls that were proving Joseph Smith's prophetic vision and all this stuff. The problem is evidence, I can go with that. That works. Good. But if you actually start looking into that stuff, it really breaks down quickly. But I liked the notion that evidence is a way to go. I felt that was more reliable than down on my knees feeling what my heart feels.
So here they were tacitly encouraging evidence.
Every religion does. To the extent that they think they have evidence, they push it, and they prefer it. They prefer it in every instance.
Right.
So that's the stuff they're going to really bring on. But then they say, oh, but you know, if it doesn't go quite all the way, that's where you need faith. I started researching some of this stuff, and then I got a little more into it, and then I learned a little more about critical thinking and how to assess evidence. And, you know, at that time, this was the early 90s, a lot of stuff was going on, particularly regarding the DNA. And as you know, Mormons, it's a very, I mean, it's the central claim of the Book of Mormon, that the Native Americans are Hebrews. And by 93, it was over. It was a done deal. Actually, by about 91, the DNA had been sampled pretty much, you know, both continents all the way through, and there was no evidence that the Native Americans were Hebrews. Right. And that was kind of like my, okay, but I still couldn't get out of it, because it's very, you know, when you're raised in it, it's your whole life, because it's a very totalitarian religion. They don't have any paid clergy, so you're always doing something in the church. And, you know, there are meetings all throughout the week, and you're connected doing this and doing that. And you're part of the priesthood if you're, you know, if you're a 12-year-old man or male, I should say, and up. You're connected. You're hooked in. So I knew I was gonna lose a lot of friends and all of that kind of stuff. And the final straw for me came. Two things happened. One, I had mentioned this article to my home teacher, who was a good friend of mine, who came by, about chastity and how crazy Mormons were about chastity and some of the stupid things that they'd said over the years. And he tried to defend it, and it turned into an ugly, ugly, heated thing where I just really told off some people big time.
Really? And was
because
it every
of chastity?
Because of some of the things that they'd said, particularly one quote about how there was a very strong implication. I can get it and read it for you if you need it, because I have it. I'm working on my book on Mormonism right now, about how a woman is possibly complicit and loses virtue in rape. Enforced incidences.
Yuck.
Yeah. And that's what got the meeting going. And it was a big brouhaha.
I
left thinking, okay, that's no big whoop. It'll boil over. I never got back. That was my last time in a Mormon church as a Mormon.
But
the big thing was, there was an article by Levina Fielding Anderson talking about spiritual abuse by the church leadership of intellectuals and historians and feminists within the church. And then there was this big excommunication in September of 92. The September 6th is what they're called, and they got excommunicated. And that was it for me. That was a Galileo moment. They were excommunicating a historian, D. Michael Quinn, who was Mormonism's best historian. And for me, if you're a historian, you just show them where they're wrong. Yeah, here's where you're wrong. Here, we'll show you documents. Well, they couldn't do that, so they just excommunicated him. And that was such a Galileo moment for me.
Yeah.
I was like,
Night of the
see
Long
ya.
Knives kind of thing.
We'll see you.
Is it called September 6th?
They're referred to as the September 6th. There were six people who got
major
excommunicated.
Remember the 6th of September.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, and that final meeting that you had, really, that kind of turned you away, did everybody turn on you, or were there some people who were kind of
guy, the big question that came up is, this guy was trying to explain to me how if his wife were raped, she would be less virtuous. And I said, would you consider her less virtuous? And he said, no, I wouldn't, but I know that she would. And I said, yeah, because a bunch of us guys like this sit around in a room and you know, comply with the stupid, I mean, I really went, I it wasn't pretty. Wow. The stupid ideas of some old guys sitting in an ivory tower in Salt Lake City. And
that he would personalize it like that.
Yeah, it was horrible.
His own wife.
It was absolutely. And, you know, I had already been very troubled about how Mormons just don't think for themselves. They're so authority bound. I mean, the whole church is based on authority. The central claim of the church is that the authority to do the saving ordinances of the church, baptism, marriage, that kind of thing, that authority was given back to Joseph Smith via the apostles, you know, Peter, James, and John, and John the Baptist and all that. So authority is everything to Mormons and their theology. And so if you don't abide by the authority, you're pretty much out. So they're very strict in their, you know, I mean, unless you're kind of on the fringes, you're generally hip deep in that kind of authoritarian culture.
Well, what do you think of this, Brian? I know you haven't listened to the second part of our story
it
yet.
It just came out today.
It did.
But
it did.
I was very excited.
Totally
it's already
forgiven.
Downloaded and queued up, ready to go.
He already promoted it.
Yeah,
it's the truth.
I did on Facebook.
When Ross and I had our conversation with our elders and with this teacher, Anderson, who had been kind of hanging out with the elders and teaching us also, they made this big deal about how much they like my questions and how much they appreciate that I bit back more than Ross and that I really challenged them all the time.
Right, and here we thought she was the bad cop, but yeah. I was a good cop.
After Ross left, they were like, really glad you stayed because we need you in the church because you really fight. You really fight us.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
It's just complete bullshit.
Yeah, they say that.
Right? They'll say that. But, you know, I've had too many people go to them and say, you know, when I started looking into this stuff, I mean, I didn't do it in a vacuum. I went to my leaders and said, hey, you know, what's the deal here? One guy told me I was thinking too much. Mm-hmm. Another leader higher up in the church told me that I was evil, and then he jolted back and said, no, you're not evil, but you've been an evil spirit has taken you over.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, you cannot disagree with them and not be ultimately under the influence of the evil one.
Right.
I remember pointedly asking them that. I said, you know, in the Mormon Church, they don't blame the devil for everything that goes wrong, do they? And they're like, oh, no, of course not. We realize that there are real factors.
We blame you, Ross, personally.
And they did tell us before we got baptized that the devil would be on our trail.
Yes.
Tempting us and giving us doubts.
Right.
Which seemed like right before you make any major decision.
And of
you
course
doubts.
They would say that. Yeah.
Isn't that just the beauty of the supernatural world is you can always blame, you know, something on the devil. You know, right. early one of my favorite things about early Christianity is people, you know, one of the criticisms of early Christianity is that they, you know, everybody was saying, this is not the first dying, resurrecting God-man story we've heard.
Right.
You know,
right.
this tale has been going on for 1,000 years. To which the early church fathers replied by calling it diabolical mimicry.
Yes.
They said right, that Satan
right.
knew what was going to happen, and so he
mimicked it.
Stories that looked like it. So when the real thing came along, you would think it was just another one of those
right.
silly stories.
Right.
Much like Satan
boy.
Hiding fossils. And...
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 It's
guy.
The same kind of thing. He is. She is.
Oh, right. Yeah. And we were trying to make the point to them that, yeah, that's a consistent way to look at the world, but there's another way.
Yes.
We were trying
yes.
to make that point.
Yes.
But it seems to get out of it, you have to have like some kind of, you have to put some value higher than authority, higher than the church, like
right.
truth or
right.
women's rights
right.
or something.
Right.
And that can lead you
right.
out.
Right. You know, the other problem with that thinking, with that metaphysical kind of supernatural thinking, is that they never ever turn the tables on it. Like I remember saying to a guy that I was debating on YouTube, he was telling me about the evidence for the resurrection, and I mm-hmm. said, so what does that get you? How do you know even then, okay, I'm going to assume that everything you've said about the resurrection is absolutely true, that Jesus rose from the dead and ascended into heaven. How do you know God did it?
Mm.
How do you know it wasn't Satan? Because look at what happened afterwards. That's some ugly stuff. I mean, he might have done it to create thousands of years of war and famine and no progress whatsoever. How do you know? How do you know? Once you entertain that there's something beyond that we don't understand, it's pointless because you can't know anything about it. And anybody who says anything about it is just as valid as anyone
right.
else, because there's no way to test to find out whether, you know, this guy's telling the truth or someone else's.
No standard.
How
right.
do you know you're not under Satan's influence?
Ooh. We might be.
Yeah.
We're in her house.
Can't rule it out.
Okay. That's my best theremin I can do.
So now that you've found your way out and, you know, logic and reason are sort of your master,
mm-hmm.
are there any beliefs you still hold that you would say aren't grounded in logic and reason?
Ultimately, I mean, obviously I have a thing for blondes.
Damn it, I died.
Other
hair.
Than that, yeah.
More brunettes for me.
Married two of them. I don't know. You know, to the extent that I am, I'm not consciously aware of it. And if I were, I'd be going, what the heck's going on with me there? I mean, I'm pretty much, you know, my belief system is very minimalistic now. That's the beauty of being a skeptic, is you don't really, there's not a lot you have to believe. There's not a lot of baggage that comes with skepticism. You say, but it's always on the table. Everything's on the table. If we find out that I'm wrong about this, I can change my mind.
Right.
You can't do that in religion. There's no, oh, well, I could be wrong about this. No, that's just not anywhere in the theology of any religion. You can't get people to go out for 2 years in their life if you're teaching them, you know, that there is a possibility that you're wrong. You're not going to be giving up the punani for 2 years.
Right.
Forgive my French. On the basis of we could be wrong.
Although,
so it has to be.
At the end of my meeting with them, I did get them to list the things that would falsify their faith.
Oh, really? And what did
yeah.
they say?
She pressed.
What did
hard.
They say?
One of them said if I could show him that there wasn't good evidence of the atonement. One said if I could show him that there were any lies in the Book of Mormon. And one said if
he could find something
that gave him more peace.
And the atonement one, you know, if he's seen evidence that Jesus didn't rise from the dead, you know, that's a tough standard because you're never going to get definitive proof of that.
Right. If there was no town called Nazareth in Jesus' day, does that give you some trouble? He's called Jesus of Nazareth and there's no town called Nazareth? That's a stumbling block for me, but...
Speaking of blondes, your wife is a believer, right?
She is, yeah. What's She's a Lutheran.
Like? And you're not. I mean, you consider yourself an atheist.
I'm an atheist. Okay. I'm a hardcore, want to change the world, get rid of religion altogether atheist.
So you guys seem to get along. Like?
Okay. We get along really well.
Yeah.
We used to have some blowouts over it. We don't really anymore. We had kind of one big talk. She is a believer, but she's not by any means fundamentalist in any way.
Right.
She's very liberal, very kind of, she doesn't go to church a lot. It's not a governing force in her life. Mm-hmm. She was raised with it. It still makes her feel good, the ideas about it. And I don't have any problem with that. But we did have a big blowout where we were like, it was okay, what are we going to do with this relationship kind of thing? And I said, here's my bottom line. Do you or do you not agree with me that the closer people follow these holy books, the worse off the world is?
Okay.
And she said, yes, I do agree with that.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
And so it's not a, as long as she can support me in that. And I said, well, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do to the extent that I can, is make people see that's the way it is. You know, that's all. That's what I'm about, basically, is making everybody and people follow these holy books. The worse the world becomes for everybody,
and
not just for them.
It seems that your series doesn't really get too much anger out of the religious side. It seems a lot of them actually embrace it and love it.
Yeah, we have a lot of religious... I tell people this all the time. I would say about 40% of our audience, based on my email, is religious. And we get a lot of pastors and rabbis who write in, and they love the show. Because, you know, they're hip deep in it. They get all the references, that, you know, and someone's doing something about their thing, and it's funny, and whether they agree with it ultimately in the end or not, they appreciate it and they do it. We had one... I had one pastor write me in the spring saying, do you mind? We're going to be doing I want to do a whole Bible series this summer based on the Mr. Deity episodes.
Nice.
There are going to be like 12 courses
awesome.
Based on episodes. Like, yeah, these are the people I dig. Because I try never to take a cheap shot. If I'm hitting at you, there's I can justify it in every way. There's never a cheap shot in the show. That's my standard. And Jimbo and Amy kind of hold me to that. So... yeah, it's just fun for them. If they're not, you know, the fundamentalists probably hate it, but they're not watching.
I'm still involved with the Presbyterian Church and have good friends in the church, including the pastor. And he loves the show. I've sent him episodes. I think, Paul will get a good chuckle out of that. You mentioned the resurrection earlier, and I think you almost said erection.
Yeah, I noticed that.
She
it's
always
Freudian.
Picks up on that.
What
yeah.
can I say?
Well, once he was praying, like on Resurrection Sunday or whatever, he said, and we thank you for the power of Jesus' erection. Resurrection. he said that.
Awesome.
Quickly caught himself. And then my friend Michael walked up to him afterwards and said, I love the part about Jesus' erection. I was like, shut up.
Maybe it was an erection resurrection because it was early in the morning. He'd just woken up. We all know
when guys are at
there.
Their morning wood.
It's when we're at our peak. No
you're
pun intended.
You're learning.
Oh, pun is intended.
you're learning things
wood
today.
Wood and peak. Oh, I know. I'm 28, Ross.
All right, fine. Oh, yeah, that's right. You failed the chastity lesson. Hold that thought. Let's have a word from our friend, podcaster, and origami master, Richard Saunders.
This is Richard Saunders from Sydney, Australia, hoping you'll join me for the Skeptic Zone podcast. News and interviews from around the world. That's skepticzone.com. TV.
Okay, and we're back with Brian Keith Dalton from Mr. Deity. So if a lot of your viewership is religious, and a lot of it isn't, does that mean that someone is missing the message, or does it mean that there's something for everybody in the show?
No, I think, you know, all religious people are not fundamentalist nuts who are going to hate everything that's not, you know, that pokes fun at them. I think there are a lot of religious people all across the country. They don't get the press because they're not, you know, it's not the man bites dog story. But they don't get a lot of press, and they're basically, you know, they're for the most part rational people who agree with us on, you know, on 75%, 90% maybe even. But there's that one little thing where they're just not quite in on the whole no God thing.
Right.
Do you ever go to church with your wife?
I have, yeah. We've gone to, you know, my wife goes to a church, which we found out later, they're nuts. They're all completely nuts. We found out through Lily's confirmation that they believe that the earth is 6,000 years old.
Lily, your stepdaughter.
My stepdaughter, yeah, and all of that. And,
oh, boy.
What? Because Amy wasn't raised with that. Her parents were kind of shocked by it and everything. And they're hardcore. I mean, you walk into their house and you're looking at pictures of Bush and Reagan and all that stuff. They were very right-wing conservative okay. Lutherans, Missouri Synod, all that. So we kind of found out they were nuts. I knew they were nuts early on just because...
I'm
more attuned to that. And because during their Easter service, they had like a 55-year-old woman dancing, doing interpretive dance in a very tight leotard for Easter. That was not... Jesus would not approve
of
that.
Was it Helen Mirren?
No, it was not. Okay. If it were Helen Mirren, I'd be on board. This was nothing to look at. It was one of those things where nothing to look at, people here. Nothing. Look away. Move on. And then they do a puppet show with these big giant puppets about the resurrection. It's hysterical. And their opening on Easter Sunday is one of the funniest things you've ever heard on your life, because it's this black Southern preacher. Basically, it sounds like, you know, in the red corner is Jesus, you know, and blah, blah, and he is the king of this, he is a hoja, you know, and in the blue corner, you know, Satan. It was just insane. The first time I went, I was like, this is hysterical. Having been to a Mormon service now, I'm sure you know, Mormon services are extremely conservative very mild, and there's, you know, all you get is an organ and a piano maybe.
Yeah. Right?
Sometimes they'll let you bring in a guitar. I got special dispensation.
Oh, I've never seen a
bare
guitar.
Bones.
I got special dispensation to play Jesus, Joy of Man's Desire in church. But yeah, they're so conservative, and this was just killing me. I actually had to leave the first time I went with her. I had to leave because I was laughing so hard. And then my stepson was cracking up. And then Amy was pissed at me a little bit, except for the fact that she was cracking up too.
And, you know, is this the dancing lady or?
All of it.
Puppetry.
The whole thing.
Well, I used to get all the puppetry and the flannel graphs. They really advance the art form.
Yeah,
the
they really do.
Flannel graphs. Come on.
What?
No, it's like this felt board, and they stick these little cutout, you know, felt characters to it, and they tell stories.
Yeah.
No idea.
Whoa.
It's awesome.
I can't even
really
picture
it. It's awesome. Yeah.
I'll have to Google that. Brian, I want to ask you a question from one of our listeners.
Okay.
So this is from listener David from Lodi. What has the response been from your family and friends who still practice the Mormon faith? Do you occasionally get secret fan mail from the church, and has your work generated any Foremans?
I don't know if my work has generated any Foremans, but I get Foremans coming up to me all the time now when I speak and going, hey, we're Foremans too, you know. And it's a lot easier to become a Foreman now because of the internet, you know, you can find the information. It was hard when I was getting out, 91, 92, 93. Tough to find, and you had to buy these really expensive books from these teeny publishers. You know, they were like $50. It was crazy.
With good stories of people who had left?
Instructions?
Yeah, well, just basic information, just history, you know, kind of thing.
Okay.
Some of D. Michael Quinn's books. My family handled it pretty well. My dad was the most upset of anyone, which is funny because he was a convert to the church and never really bought it. I always got the feeling when I was growing up, my dad didn't buy it.
Well,
he was
probably fighting the hardest then.
Yeah. And he was, I think he was just pissed, like, I didn't know you could leave.
Right,
what the hell
right.
are you doing? And sure enough, he became an atheist like 3 years after my mom died. Yeah. And the way he did it was, it's really a clever way to go at somebody. He read the Bible. He just read the Bible. And I came over to the house one day. He says, do you know what the hell is in this damn thing? It's sick. It's sick stuff. Mm. Yeah, I do, Dad. That's why I'm...
Okay.
That's
not
good.
Why I'm not a fan.
Right.
So he's 93 now, and he's still out, and he's, you know, I gave him all the, you know, the Dawkins and the Hitchens and all that stuff to read. He loves it, and then the missionaries still come to see him and his bishop, And he gives them hell every time they come over. He's great.
See, wow. He's living proof, because if he's there were a God, he would have struck him dead by now.
That's true. That's true.
Maybe. Or, well, God works.
Not only that, but he's had major prostate cancer forever and then quit taking the drugs. And they said, you're going to be dead in 6 months. And nothing damages him.
But
so maybe he's found the right way.
Maybe God's using him as a test for everybody else. You can always
find
a way around
that's
this.
That's true. That's a good point.
You see how their logic has seeped into her brain.
Really I've learned.
What was the other question? I don't get fan mail from the church. No. I did get my brother-in-law out of it.
Oh.
Because my wife left with me. And then my brother-in-law, who was like the black sheep of the family, he didn't really want to have anything to do with religion. And then one day he tells me he's going on a mission. I'm like, what the? He said, well, I feel like I owe it to my family to give it a shot and all that stuff. And I went, okay. And he went away to, I think he went to Colombia or one of those. He was in South America somewhere. And he started getting all haughty, you know, with me while he was out, sending me this, you know, well, here's why it's the true church. And, you know, really? Writing me these letters. I wrote him, but I was kind of mild about it while he was out there. When he came back, I said, you want to hear my side of it? Because if you do, I said, it's going to rock your world. And he had such great integrity. And he said, I don't want to live my life, you know, and find out when I'm 93 that I was living a lie. So if whatever you've got, hit me with it.
Nice.
And I put together this thing. I got to show you that because I do have it upstairs now. It's this thick resource of stuff that I must.
That I sent him?
Yeah, that I had been spending a lot of time working on myself anyway. And then he took it around to his people and the leaders started, you know, they basically told him, don't talk to your brother-in-law. And he was like, what, you got no answers for me? And he was out. Probably within 6 months of that.
He had the right attitude.
So he left voluntarily or he was kicked out for asking questions?
Yeah, no, he just said, forget you.
Fresh out of his mission.
I don't know that he ever tendered his letter of resignation like I did, but he doesn't have anything to do with it.
Now, you've used the
term. And he loves his beer now.
Excellent. You've used the term atheist, skeptic. Do you have any aversion to titles or kind of all of the above, humanist?
I don't, I'm kind of all above. I'm a secular humanist and a skeptic. And a secular humanism kind of talks more about my values.
Right.
Skepticism speaks more to my
approach.
to my methodology. Free thinker is just another. I mean, how can you not value free thought? And then atheist just is regarding this one silly little thing that I don't believe in, and it doesn't define me in any way because it's just another thing I don't believe in, like fairies or Bigfoot. One of my favorite things is that whole notion of how would the world be different if there weren't a God? I love that idea. I can't imagine anything being different. Amputees still wouldn't grow back their limbs prayer.
It seems like sometimes the implication is that nothing good could possibly happen. Only the bad could be explainable in a world with no God.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Did you have any history with any other like spiritualities or religions?
Yeah, I got really into Judaism.
Oh,
okay.
When I was, how old was I? It was 1988. I became good friends with Dennis Prager, who's a syndicated radio talk show host and probably the most eloquent theist that I've ever heard. We became good friends, and then I moved in with him. I shared an office with him, and we worked together for nearly 2 years. And during that time, I learned a lot about Judaism. He always said, he used to say, you know, more than 98% of all Jews on the planet about the religion. And when I left Mormonism, I was still kind of like, I wasn't quite an atheist. I was in a big G way because Mormonism, as you now know, doesn't have a big G God. It has a small G God. So I kind of was without knowing it or without caring about it, I should say.
Wait, Mormonism has a little G God?
Yeah,
Mormonism doesn't have a big G God. There is no.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's ultimately why I think Mormon theology is just the most humongous failure because it doesn't answer the ultimate question of is there a God, a capital G. Mm-hmm. It only has a small G God because as. Do they go into this anymore about how as God now is, or as man now is, God once was?
And they admit to the infinite regress of, you know, God had a God before him, who had a God before him, where does it end?
Mm-hmm. Right. But it doesn't answer the question of is there ultimately one, you know, God?
Well, I think the answer would just be no, right?
I just don't think they have an answer. I don't think they've thought it through to that extent. I don't think Joseph Smith was a very deep guy in that regard. I mean, he was brilliant, and he had some very interesting and crazy ideas, but I don't think he understood. You know, he wasn't uber religious. growing up. No one was back then. There was a lot of folk magic in the religion going on. You know, it wasn't like we know religion today. So when I got out of Mormonism, I thought that I had a daughter. I had a 3-year-old daughter, and I thought, oh, I got to give my daughter something, some kind of spiritual background. And certainly you can't raise a good kid without God, and, you know, how are they going to tell right and wrong?
Mm-hmm. You were and still believing that at
yeah,
the time.
I was still buying into most of that stuff. So I started looking very seriously into Judaism. I went to synagogue, and I talked to rabbis and whatnot. And the big crux of it there for me, I like Judaism because they don't even care if you believe in God or not. It's all about doing the mitzvah. Mm-hmm. And the problem for me was the ethnicity. Because growing up here in Southern California, that's very integrated, I didn't have neither of my parents, despite the fact that they were just, you know, they were the first generation born here. My mother's parents came from Germany. My father's came from Ireland. Had nothing to do with their own ethnicity. I don't know anything about being Irish mm-hmm. or German or anything mm-hmm. like that. So ethnicity was just not on the table. And in fact, I grew up kind of not liking ethnicity because it's something that just divided us. And I always liked.
We're all Americans.
And that was just tough to get over. Plus, I don't like matzo balls. So that was difficult. And then I moved on to the Catholics because they have the best hats. And I don't know that I tried to convert to Catholicism, but I thought they have great schools. I can get in on this one. And I talked to a priest, and he said, you know, if you don't buy it, we're not taking you, basically. And I couldn't tell him that I bought their story. So they told me no.
They would just want your money.
Yeah. And then this is a great story. The way I found skepticism or realized that I was a skeptic was because I was still very right-wing. When you leave Mormonism, you're generally, you know, you're a Republican still.
One thing at a time.
And I was listening to Dr. Laura's show.
Oh, boy.
And this is before she got Religion with a Vengeance.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know this, but she was on the board of Skeptic Magazine, Michael Shermer's.
Yes.
Michael Shermer's publication.
That,
yeah. And she had written an article on false memory syndrome. And I picked it up and I was reading it. And then I read the rest of the stuff and I was like, oh, my God, these are my people.
Aww.
These are my people. And I started going to Caltech, and then I became friends with Michael, and I designed the magazine, the last iteration, not this most recent one. But
well, thank you, Dr. Laura.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Laura, for helping me find my people.
Nice.
Let my people go.
Yay.
And Michael, you mean Michael Shermer.
Michael Shermer, yeah.
The editor.
Who is
head of the
just
magazine.
The best. You know what's amazing to me? I was watching a video. I was doing some research the other day, and I'm watching this thing, and the guy says, biblically speaking, this is blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, you know, we really need to start calling this what it is. These Bronze Age ignoramuses said blah. That's what it really comes down to when you're talking about 1 Corinthians and blah, blah, blah. These are I'm sorry. They're not stupid people. But in comparison to what we know about the world and the way it works now, they are complete ignoramuses. We would not listen to a thing they said about anything else.
Take
you got Jesus himself casting out demons.
Yeah.
Like, that's what mental illness
was
really
over
is.
Half of his miracles.
Which was a decent theory at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They weren't standing on the shoulders
of giants. But
you know
what? If you're God Almighty, you should know better. So, I have a version of the that I wrote. We were going to do it at some point. It's another way of the mister thing that I want to do. It's a version of the Sermon on the Mount where he actually gives us all kinds of great useful stuff instead of blessed are these guys, blessed are those guys.
Mm. Stuff the creator
blessed
of the universe
art thou, blessed are those who wash their hands before meals and before preparing meals. You know, blessed. There's so much simple stuff.
Yeah.
God Almighty could have told us if he were incarnate down here with us.
But way of the mister, what's that?
Way of the Mister. Well, it started with our Way of the Mister newsletter, but it's something we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing a Way of the Mister videos that are, they don't necessarily have anything to do with Mister Deity. But they're just fun kind of things. Our first one coming up is going to be on reparative therapy, and you guys are both going to be in it. That'll be fun. And it's going to be done as a 60-minute style piece.
Fine.
So I don't want to give anything away because it's got a good twist to it.
That's what she said.
Yep. to those yogis in India who wrap their penises up in the thing and twist them. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
I have. Oh, that was in
Let's
the
not
Nature
do an
of
investigation
existence.
On that.
Oh,
was it?
Yeah. Yeah, Ross, there we go. You need to do one of those. Let's see how much you can
it's
twist
your penis.
It's
similar to ear candling.
Let's table that one.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I'm sure a lot of people know, but Way of the Mister, it's a great joke on Way of the Master.
Way of the Master.
Have you met Ray Comfort?
I haven't, but he handed me one of his books,
Origin of Species, with the foreword. You picked one up for me.
I was going into one of the Caltech lectures at Caltech over there with Shermer's group,
Richard
and they were
Dawkins
handing him out.
Talk.
And I'm kind of standing there, and this short little guy comes and walks up to me and goes, "Hey," and I took it, and I'm looking at it, and I look around, and I'm. That was him. That was him. That was Ray Comfort. Yep. Oh, crap.
He called me pretty.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Ray Comfort.
Nice
yeah.
Australian
he asked
accent.
Me, yeah, he asked me to take a picture with him. But I was, the line was moving, and he like gave me his Origin of Species, and then he's like, "Take a picture with me." And I think no one was stopping to talk to him, and he's like, "Don't you want to take a picture, pretty lady?" And I was like, I'm Richard Dawkins. I got a.
Yeah.
In any other situation,
between
he'd
you and
out.
Richard Dawkins.
Yeah.
I was just talking to Thunderfoot when you guys came over.
That's
you
exciting.
Heard
right.
Me. And I was asking, one of the things I asked him, so what's Ray Comfort like in real life? He's the sweetest guy in the world. Overly sweet.
He's
too nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
From what I hear, it's like he doesn't take himself too seriously.
Which doesn't shock me, yeah. No, I would love to have him on the show at some point. I think it would
be great
to have Mr. Beatty
and
Ray Comfort on a show.
Sure.
I don't know if he'd do it, but he seems like he'd be cool enough to where he that wouldn't be a big deal for him.
It would be hard to come up with a banana joke that hasn't been done for that.
Yeah, well, we did almost every one of them you could possibly do in season 3. We had a lot of fun with that.
So if you had to pick something that you're religious about now, what would it be?
That I'm religious about? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, movies. I mean, I'm probably...
Good choice.
That's probably the thing I'm most passionate about. I love film.
I think
film is pretty much the Bible of our day. I mean, the Bible is basically just great stories that tell us how we should live that were written poorly by Bronze Age ignoramuses. Movies today are kind of taking the place of even of great literature, which is a little sad, but I think people should read and get that experience. But movies are great at opening up these doors and looking at issues and whatnot. I just wish it wasn't such a... You know, it's all about the money, so
right. It's
hard to get anything made that's truly brilliant anymore, and even brilliant cinematically is tough. When you've got Transformers, you know, making $1 billion, it's just frightening.
So we got a few questions from the Mormons, or I shouldn't say questions, claims, that I want to hear your one-sentence response to.
Okay. I'm supposed to keep it to one sentence? You know me.
Mm-hmm. Two sentences.
All right.
Two sentences, but I don't want like a sentence with like 6 semicolons in it.
Or profanity.
No, profanity's fine.
One sentence has to be funny and the other one serious and in iambic pentameter.
Okay, I can do that.
If possible.
I'm skilled with the iambic.
All right, Joseph Smith was 14 when the Book of Mormon was translated, therefore it could not possibly be a forgery.
Well, he wasn't 14. There's no...
Thank you.
There's no one who's read anything about it, that it was 14. 14 is supposedly when he had the first vision, but the Book of Mormon didn't come around till much later. And the bigger problem
That's two.
Oh, no, I was going to point that out to them, but I just let them keep talking. They kept saying, like,
right.
I just can't believe that a 14-year-old would come up with this. I was like, he was 25 when it was published.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he had source material. Ethan Smith's view of the Hebrews.
What was I going to say, though? Joseph Smith predicted the Civil War.
Oh, that one's a very popular one. If you look into it, actually, what you would find out, because I had that one coming up at me all the time. What you find out is that during the time that he made that prophecy, it looked exactly like they were going to war, and it was going to start in South Carolina and everything. So it was not.
It didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah, it didn't come out of nowhere. It was like everything was pretty much there, primed as he was making that prediction, and it was not like 40 years out. He saw this. He thought it was happening tomorrow.
Hmm. Okay.
In that stack of. Stuff that I gave my brother-in-law, that's one of the things that I take down. One of the great things that you can learn from Mormonism is that no matter how crazy a belief system is, you can still make a good argument for it.
Yeah, of course. That's the internal consistency.
And so arguments are not evidence, and what you really need is the actual evidence for things.
Fair enough.
Well, let me ask you guys one question. Can I get one question in?
Yeah.
What did they finally say? Did you ever give them the DNA evidence? And what did they say to that?
Yeah, we did bring it up.
We mentioned it. It was in sort of a long line of things.
I think it seemed like they were trying to find an out by saying that people group died off. And so that's why there's no genes left. And it's a different indigenous group that moved in later.
One of the things that I had heard years and years ago was that they were trying to go back to this, it was a very small area and a very small group of people. It's not what the Book of Mormon says at all. I mean, they were massive armies, people dying in their wars in the millions. And, the Book of Mormon itself says they covered the land from the north, south, to the east, to the west. There's a guy named John L. Sorensen who works for Farms, which is their hardcore apologetics place. You guys would get a kick out of that, by the way. Go and look up Farms, FARMS. .org, I think is what it is. And, why aren't we finding these species that they had here? And there's all kinds of explanations how Joseph Smith, by the power of God, mistranslated things like deer for peccary, or I can't remember what the, pig for peccary, or, there's all these mistranslations. It was actually a deer, which, by the way, how do you get that to pull a chariot? I
don't know. Have unicorns in the King James Bible.
That's true. Why not?
Can I ask you the one question that we got asked the most, though?
Yeah.
Do you have special underwear?
I don't anymore. I got rid of mine.
You didn't keep it?
No, I got rid of mine. I kind of wish I would have kept it.
Yeah.
That would have been a fun artifact to have. Now I got to go back in, get a temple recommend, do all that stuff. You guys can grab me, snag me.
Yeah, they actually offered me a special temple recommend, even though I haven't been there a year, because they could tell how strong my spirit was.
Well, really?
Now you've ruined it.
You should go in and learn the magic handshake, or I can just teach you now.
Oh,
I can give you the whole spiel.
Okay, listeners, watch. He's going to show us.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm going to describe it. One of them.
Okay, you're holding this, it's very sexual.
I've seen that before.
I think it's called the special the true sign of the nail, because Mormons believe that Jesus was not only nailed here through the hand.
Oh, right, but here through the wrist, which makes a little sense.
So this goes through here.
Okay.
And then there's a certain way you hold each other, knee to knee, hand to back.
This is against the law of chastity.
Yes, it is. And you say, health in the navel, marrow in the bone, strength be upon me, upon my posterity, throughout all generations of time and throughout all eternity, and some other stuff.
If bone and posterity and strength and that handshake are all in there...
It's tough.
Chastity is
it's
not
tough.
Happening.
Yeah, you get stressed out. I can now say I've held hands with Carrie Poppy.
It's true.
Very exciting.
Well, that's it for our show. Be sure to check out MrDeity.com for more from Brian. And remember that you can subscribe to Oh No, Ross and Carrie through iTunes or ohnopodcast.com. And be sure to like us on Facebook.
Very many, many thanks to our guest, Brian Keith Dalton. And Brian... Would you like the final word?
That's lovely. Yes.
There we go.
Oh, almost.
Lovely.
Woo!
All right. Any final thoughts?
Be chaste.
Yes. I failed already.
That's good.